tell Lade, I really...
You're not to go. You have to stay and hear what I've got to say.
Jackie, you're making a fool of yourself. For God's sake, go to bed.
Oh, you're afraid of a scene, aren't you, Simon? That's because you're so English, so reticent. You want me to behave decently, isn't that it? But I don't care whether I behave decently or not. You damned fool. Do you think you can treat me the way you have done and get away with it? I told you that I'd kill you sooner than see you go to another woman. You don't think I mean it, do you? But you're wrong. You're my man, Simon. You belong to me!
Jackie, for goodness sake!
I told you I'd kill you and I meant it. I'll shoot you down like a dog!
Jackie, for God's sake, put that down!
I told you!
Help! What the hell's going on?
Oh, Mr. Fenton, thank God you're still up. She shot him! I didn't mean it!
How seriously are you hurt? Oh my God, your leg's bleeding badly.
Bethel, for heaven's sake. I don't want anyone to know about this. Say it's just an accident. I don't want to scandal over this business.
What is it, Chris? What's happened?
It's all right. It's nothing. We were just having a bit of fun. It's a game.
Oh, I see. A game. That's all right, Emma.
Let's hope nobody else heard it. Now we'd better see to this leg.
I wish I was dead. What have I done? What have I done?
Get her to her cabin, Fan. Miss Robson. Look, see if you can get hold of the hospital nurse that looks after your cousin.
Yes.
I don't want Jackie left on her own. Don't leave her until she's got the nurse to look after her. Then get hold of... Oh, what's the name of the doctor? Chap called what?
Dr. Bessner?
Just get him here.
Yes.
But for God's sake, don't let any news of this get to my wife.
I understand. I'll do just as you say. Come on, Miss Belfort.
Come on. You've got to lie down.
I'll drown myself. I'm not going to live.
I think you'd better go for the nurse straight away, Stratton. I'll look after Miss Belfort.
I'll go and find her.
I must go back. No, I can't leave him there. He could be bleeding to death.
He'll be all right for a little while, I'm sure. He'll be all right.
Let me go. Oh, God, I want to kill myself. Oh, God, what have I done?
So, Mr. Doyle, I have done the best that I can. You've lost a lot of blood, but the bleeding has stopped now. You've been quite a hero, my friend.
There's something I've just remembered. That pistol of hers. It must be lying around somewhere in the saloon. We ought not to leave it there, Fenthorpe.
You're right. I'll go and get it now.
You'd better stay here in my cabin for the time being, Mr. Doyle. Ooh, what should we do about your wife?
She didn't know until morning. Is someone with Jackie?
Ah, yes. Miss Bowers, the nurse, is looking after her. She's given her a morphine injection.
Oh, you mustn't blame her. It's all my fault. I've treated her disgracefully.
And now I am going to give you something to make you sleep.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'd like that, Dr. Bessner. Oh, poor Jackie. She didn't know what she was doing.
Yes? What is it?
Look, Dr. Bessner, I can't find that pistol. I've been over every inch of the saloon. It's gone.
But who can have taken it?
God knows.
It is very curious. But there's nothing we can do about it now. We'd better wait until morning.
Come in.
Poirot!
What is it, Colonel? A little early for a social visit?
Your instinct was quite right. It's happened.
What has happened, Colonel?
Lynette Doyle is dead.
Huh?
She was shot through the head last night in her cabin.
Oh, mon Dieu.
They've placed the whole matter in my hands. The boat's due to start in half an hour, but it will remain here and not move until I give the word. There's a possibility that the murderer came from the shore.
I do not think that is likely.
Oh, perhaps one can rule that out. I agree. A prisoner should be in Mrs. Doyle's cabin by now. I sent the steward for him.
Then we had better go and hear what he has to say.
Yeah.
She was shot at very close range. You see here, just above the ear, that is where the bullet entered. A very little bullet, I should say, 22.
Mm-hmm.
The pistol was held close against her head. You see? There's blackening there.
Yeah.
The skin was scorched.
I see, yes.
She was asleep. There was no struggle. The murderer crept up in the dark and shot her as she lay here.
But that cannot be true.
But that is what happened, I tell you.
Yes. I did not mean that. I was not contradicting you. But what is this?
What is what?
This letter J scrawled on the wall. And there is blood on the dead woman's finger.
Well, I am damned. What do you make of it?
It is very simple, is it not? Madame Doyle is dying. She wishes to make known her killer, so she writes in her own blood the initial letter of the murderer's name.
Oh, is that what you think?
No, it is not what I think.
It is absurd. The poor lady died instantaneously.
But it was done with a purpose. What does J stand for?
It stands for Jacqueline de Beaufort, a young lady who declared to me only a few days ago that she would like nothing better than to put her little pistol close against Madame Doyle's head and press the trigger.
God, even that was just what was done here. What was the time of death?
Oh, I would not care to be too precise. She has certainly been dead for 6 hours and probably not longer than eight.
That puts the time of the murder between, midnight and 2 a.m.
That is so.
What about her husband? I suppose he sleeps in the cabin next door.
At the moment, he is asleep in my cabin.
Huh? What is that?
Oh, I see. You have not yet been informed. Mr. Doyle was shot last night in the saloon.
Huh? Shot? By whom?
By the young lady, Jacqueline de Beaufort.
Oh, mon Dieu.
Is he badly hurt?
Yes, the bone was splintered. I've done all that I can, but it is necessary that the fracture should be x-rayed as soon as possible.
Are we to believe that Jacqueline de Beaufort shot Doyle and then went along to his wife's cabin and shot her as well?
No, I do not think so. For one thing, she would not write her own initial on the wall. That would be ridiculous.
Then someone did it to throw suspicion on her.
Well, if that is so, then the criminal was unlucky. Because, you see, it is not only unlikely that the young woman committed the murder, it is virtually impossible that she could have done so.
Well, how is that?
I think it would be best if I explained what happened last night. Then you can judge for yourselves.
And you are certain that Miss Bowers stayed in Mademoiselle de Belfort's cabin all the time?
As certain as I can be. In any case, she administered a very heavy sedative.
Who discovered the crime?
Mrs. Doyle's maid, Louise Bourget. She went to call her mistress as normal, found her dead, and flopped into the steward's arms in a faint.
Doyle must be told. You say he's still asleep?
Yes, but I will go along to my cabin and see how he is.
Thank you, Doctor. So, what do we do now, Poirot? You're the man in charge. The boat won't move until you're satisfied. I'll take my orders from you.
We must set up a court of inquiry. I suggest a saloon. First, we must question Miss Robson and Mr. Fanthorpe to verify the story of last night. I particularly want to know what happened to that pistol.
After Miss de Beaufort had shot Mr. Doyle, she dropped it. Then she kicked it away with her foot. I think she kind of hated it.
But what happened to it?
It went under a settee.
Are you certain that Mademoiselle de Beaufort did not recover it before she left the saloon?
Yes, I'm certain.
Then we arrive at this point. When Mademoiselle de Beaufort leaves the room, the pistol is under the settee. And since she was not left alone at any time, that is correct?
Yes, that is correct.
She had no opportunity to get back the pistol after she had left the saloon. Now, what time was it, Mr. Fanthorpe, when you went to look for it?
It must have been just before 12:30.
And how long would have elapsed between the time you and Dr. Bessner carried Simon Doyle out of the saloon and your coming back to look for the pistol?
About 15 minutes, perhaps a little more.
Then, in that 15 minutes, someone removes the pistol from where it lay out of sight under the settee. It seems highly probable that the person who took it was the murderer of Madame Doyle. We may assume, too, that the person had overheard or seen something of the events in the saloon.
But I was out on deck just before the shot was fired.
On which side?
On the starboard side.
Then if there had been anyone on the port side looking through the glass, you would not have seen him?
No.
Very well. Now, Miss Robson, I have no more questions for you.
Okay, Monsieur Perrault.
Thank you, Miss Robson.
Thank you.
Tell me, Monsieur Fanthorpe, what are your reasons for visiting this country?
Well, pleasure, I suppose.
You take the holiday, is that it?
Yes.
After it was all over and you went back to your cabin last night, did you hear anything? Anything at all?
I think I heard some kind of splash, just as I was dropping off. Nothing else.
And what time would that be?
Oh, I was half asleep. It might have been 1 o'clock. I really can't say.
Thank you, Mr. Fanthorpe. That will be all.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot.
Thank you. Yes, well done. So, someone pinched the pistol. It couldn't have been Jacqueline de Belfort, but whoever did it knew that she would be the most likely suspect. But that someone did not know that a nurse was going to give her morphine and would sit up with her all night.
I didn't do it, Monsieur Poirot. Everyone will think I did, but I swear it wasn't me. I wanted to kill Simon last night. I must have been out of my mind. But I did not kill Lynette.
My dear, we know that you did not kill Mrs. Doyle.
It is proved it could not have been you.
But who did it then?
That is just the question we are asking. Can you help us there, my child?
I can't think of anyone who wanted her dead, except me. What is so horrible is that she died just as I said.
Yes, mademoiselle, she was shot through the head.
But then I was right. That night at the Cataract Hotel, there was someone listening.
Yes, I wondered if you would remember that. It is altogether too much of a coincidence.
But who could he have been? The man who was listening to us.
You are certain that it was a man?
No. No, I'm not. I just assumed it was, but it was really just a figure, a shadow.
Will you come and speak to Mr. Doyle, please, Monsieur Poirot? He's asking to see you.
Uh-huh. How is he? Is he all right?
Oh, naturally, he's not all right. The bone is fractured.
But he isn't going to die.
Who said anything about dying? All he needs is an X-ray and proper treatment.
But it's crazy. Impossible. Well, apart from Jackie, who could possibly have wanted to kill her?
You are sure she had no enemies? No one who had a grudge against her?
A grudge? Well, I know that she was upset about one of the names on the passenger list. But...
Oh, what name, Mr. Doyle?
Oh, well, she didn't actually tell me. As a matter of fact, I wasn't listening very carefully. As far as I can remember, it was someone who had a grudge against her father.
You are quite sure that she did not mention this person's name?
Look, as I said, I wasn't paying much attention. Well, what can we do to find out?
Colonel Race and I must interview all the passengers, and it would be sensible to begin with your wife's maid. Now, perhaps, Colonel Race, it would be as well if we were to do that in here. Monsieur Doyle's presence might be useful.
Good idea, yes. Had she been with Mrs. Doyle long?
About a couple of months.
Did your wife have any valuable jewellery?
Well, they were her pearls. She once told me they were worth 40,000 or 50,000. Do you think that was why?
It's a possible motive, but all the same, it seems hardly credible. So, let us talk to the maid. She may be able to help us.
Madame came back sometime after 11. I cannot say exactly when. I undressed her and put her to bed. Then I left.
How long did all that take?
Oh, 10 minutes at most, monsieur. Madame was tired. She told me to put the lights out when I went.
Yeah, and when you left her, what did you do?
I went down to my own cabin on the deck below.
And you saw nothing more that can help us?
How could I, monsieur?
That, mademoiselle, is for you to say, not us.
But I was nowhere near. My cabin is on the deck below, on the other side of the boat. Naturally, if I had been unable to sleep and I had mounted the stairs, then perhaps I might have seen the murderer enter or leave Madame's cabin. But as it is, Monsieur Doyle, you see how it is. What can I say?
My good girl, don't be so silly. You'll be quite all right. Nobody's accusing you of anything.
We take it, then, that you saw and heard nothing.
That is what I said, monsieur.
Tell me, Mademoiselle Louise, do you know anything about your mistress's pearls?
Her pearls? She was wearing them last night.
You saw them when she came to bed?
Yes, monsieur.
Where did she put them?
On the table, by the side, as always.
Did you see them there this morning?
Oh, mon Dieu. I did not even look. I came up to the bed and I saw Madame, and then I rushed out.
You did not look. But I have the eyes which notice, and there were no pearls on the table beside the bed this morning. I am certain of that.
You know, Poirot, it's just occurred to me. You remember that Fanthorpe said that he thought he might have heard a splash last night? Well, I have a kind of recollection of hearing something of the sort myself. It's perfectly possible that after the killing, the murderer threw the pistol overboard.
No, no, my friend, it is just not credible.
Even so, I might get the crew to take a look. Where do you think the pistol is, then?
Now, there is logically only one place where it could be.
Where's that?
In Mademoiselle de Belfort's cabin.
Ah, Do you think we should investigate?
No, 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 my friend. That would be precipitate. It may not have been put there yet.
So, where do we go from here?
I think we should establish whether anyone heard anything which might give a clue as to the time of the crime.
Oh, then we should start with the occupant of the cabin immediately next to Mrs. Doyle's.
That is Mademoiselle Van Schuller.
If anybody heard anything, she should have done.
I dislike being mixed up in this business. I resent it very much. I do not wish to be associated with this very unpleasant and squalid affair.
Exactly. I was just saying to you, Monsieur Poirot, that the sooner we took your statement, the better, so that you would have no further trouble.
Thank you.
Madame, would you be so good as to tell us what time you went to bed last night?
10 o'clock is my usual time. But last night I was very late, as Cornelia kept me up waiting.
I understand. And did you hear anything after you retired?
I was woken up by that flashy young maid of Mrs. Doyle's who said, "Bonne nuit, madame," in what I cannot but think was an unnecessarily loud voice.
Mm-hmm. And after that?
I went to sleep again. And then I woke up thinking someone was in my cabin. But I realized the sounds came from the cabin next door.
Mrs. Doyle's cabin?
Yes. Then I heard someone outside, on the deck, and there was a splash.
And have you any idea what time this was?
I can tell you the time, exactly. I looked at the little clock that stands by my bed. It was 1:10.
You did not hear a shot?
No. Nothing of the kind.
But it might possibly have been a shot that wakened you.
It might.
And you have no idea what caused the splash you heard?
On the contrary. I know perfectly.
You know?
Certainly. I didn't like all the prowling around that was going on. I got up and went to the door of my cabin. I saw Miss Otterborn leaning over the side. She had just dropped something into the water.
Miss Otterborn?
Oh, yes. I saw her face quite distinctly.
She did not see you?
I don't think so.
And what did her face look like, mademoiselle?
She was in a condition of considerable emotion.
And then?
She went away around the stern of the boat, and I returned to bed.
Come in.
We've got it, Carol. Oh,
excellent. Hmm? Well done. Yes. Leave it here on the table, will you? Yes, thank you, yes. Full marks.
Thank you, sir.
What is it?
The pistol. I knew I was right. It was thrown overboard. Now, is this the one that Jacqueline de Belfort had in her hand back at the Cataract Hotel that night?
Yes, that is it. You see there, the initials JB.
Jacqueline de Belfort!
This is an article de luxe, a very feminine production, but that does not make it any the less lethal.
And what about my stole?
Your stole?
Yes, that is my velvet stole you have there. It's ruined.
Huh? It was wrapped around the pistol. You're sure it is yours, Miss Van Schuller?
Of course it's mine. I missed it last night. Cornelia thought I must have left it in my cabin.
You realize what it's been used for, don't you? The murderer wrapped it around the pistol to deaden the noise of the shot.
Oh, disgusting. It was a very expensive stole.
And this pink handkerchief, is this yours too?
Of course not. It's cheap and nasty.
I would be grateful if you would tell me the extent of your previous acquaintance with Mrs. Doyle.
There was no previous acquaintance.
But you knew of her.
I knew who she was, of course.
Yes, but your families were not acquainted.
As a family, we have always prided ourselves on our pedigree. My dear grandmother would never have dreamed of calling on the Ridgeway family. They may have had money, but they were nobodies. I never set eyes on Lynette Ridgeway until I came aboard this boat. And now, that is enough questions. I'm going back to my cabin. And let me have that stole back when you finish with it. I need it for the insurance.
Mm-hmm. And that's all we're likely to get out of her. Mm-hmm. But if it really was Rosalie Otterborn who threw the pistol overboard...
It does not make sense. None of it makes sense.
What do you mean?
I mean that up to a point it is all the clear sailing. Someone wanted to kill Mrs. Doyle. Someone overheard the scene in the saloon last night. Someone sneaked in and retrieved the pistol, Jacqueline de Belfort's pistol. Someone shot Lynette Doyle dead with that pistol and wrote the letter J on the wall. So far, all is clear. Everything is contrived to point to Jacqueline de Belfort as the killer. And then, what does the murderer do? Leave the pistol, the damning evidence for everyone to find? No. He or she throws the pistol overboard. Why, my friend? Why?
It is a bit odd, I admit.
It's more than odd. It is impossible.
No, it's not impossible since it happened.
No, I do not mean that. I mean that the sequence of events is impossible. It simply does not make sense. Everything pointed to a particular pattern of crime. Does this mean that I, Hercule Poirot, am wrong?
Steward said you wanted to see me, Colonel Race. What is it?
Monsieur Poirot and I are investigating the death of Mrs. Doyle.
I see.
Now, will you tell us what you did last night, Miss Lutterbourne?
Mother and I went to bed early, before 11. We didn't hear anything untoward except a bit of fuss outside Dr. Bessner's cabin. Of course, I didn't realise what it was all about until this morning, when I heard Mrs. Doyle was dead.
You did not hear a shot, mademoiselle?
No, I didn't.
Did you leave your cabin at all?
No, I didn't.
You are quite sure of that?
What do you mean? Of course I'm sure of it.
You did not, for instance, go round to the starboard side and throw something into the River Nile?
No, I didn't. I told you, I never left my cabin.
Then, mademoiselle, if someone says they saw you...
Who said they saw me?
Miss Van Schuler.
Miss Van Schuler?
She says that she looked out of her cabin and saw you throw something over the side.
Why on earth should I run around throwing things into the Nile in the middle of the night?
Well, there might be an innocent reason.
Innocent?
That is what I said. You see, mademoiselle, something was thrown overboard last night. Something that was not innocent. This.
Is that what she was killed with?
Yes, mademoiselle.
And you think I did it? Why on earth should I want to kill Lynette Doyle? I didn't know her.
Remember, Miss Ottawan, that Miss Van Schuler is prepared to swear she saw your face quite clearly in the moonlight.
Well, she's mistaken. It wasn't me she saw. May I go now?
Yes, you may go.
Thank you.
So, that's that. Which of them do we believe?
I have a little idea that neither of them has been quite frank with us.
So what do we do?
I think there is no point in detaining the ship here any longer. You can give orders to sail. And then we will continue with our investigation. Who is next on the list?
The archaeologist, Signor Ricchetti.
I went to bed early, very early, immediately after dinner. A pamphlet had arrived for me, which I was very eager to read.
And what was that?
Prähistorische Forschung in Kleinasien.
Ah.
The man is a fraud. Anyone could tell him there was no hand-painted pottery in Zorithos in the 8th century B.C.
And you said that you heard nothing? Nothing that might have been a pistol shot, perhaps?
The only thing that I heard was a splash. A big splash, near the porthole in my cabin.
And your cabin is on the lower deck, on the starboard side. Is that correct?
Yes, that is so.
Can you tell us what time that might have been?
It was some time after I go to sleep, perhaps 2 hours.
At 1:10, for instance?
It might very well be. But what a terrible thing. Such a charming young woman. It is an infamy. What kind of creature could commit so horrible a crime?
May we have an account of your movements last night, Mr. Ferguson?
I don't see why you should want to know, but I've no objection. I went ashore with Miss Robson. When she went back to the boat, I mooched about by the Nile for a bit by myself, and then came back and turned in around midnight.
Your cabin is on the lower deck, starboard side.
Yes. I'm not up among the knobs.
Did you perhaps hear a shot? It might have sounded like the popping of a cork.
Yes, I think I did hear something of the sort. But there was a lot of people about, some kind of commotion on the deck above.
That was probably the shot fired by Mademoiselle de Belfort.
Did you leave your cabin during the night?
No, I didn't. And I didn't participate in the good work, worse luck.
Oh, come now, Mr. Ferguson, don't be so childish.
Why shouldn't I say what I think? I believe in violence, when it's directed at the idle rich.
But you do not practice what you preach, perhaps.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Ferguson. That's all we need for the moment.
Right you are.
Stupid fella. Underneath all that rubbish, he's probably quite a likable young chap.
You don't think he may be the man you are after, the political agitator?
No, I hardly think so. But the man must be on board somewhere.
So, who is next?
The American lawyer, Mr. Pennington.
Little Lynette. I knew her when she was just a kid. Cutest little thing you can imagine. She was the light of old Mellor Shridgeway's life. Well, there's no point in going into that now. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
Oh, to begin with, Mr. Pennington, did you hear anything last night?
No, sir, I can't say I did. I have the cabin next to Dr. Bessner's, and I did notice a certain amount of commotion going on around midnight. Of course, I didn't know what it was at the time.
That you heard nothing else? No shots?
Absolutely nothing. I don't imagine it's news to you that there's plenty of rumour going around the boat. That half-French girl, Jacqueline Belfort, there'd been some affair between her and Simon Doyle, hadn't there? Cherche la femme. It's a pretty sound rule in my experience.
I can assure you, Mr. Pennington, that we have satisfied ourselves that it would have been impossible for Jacqueline de Belfort to have shot Madame Doyle. That is where we hope that you may be able to help us.
Aye.
You are an intimate friend of the dead woman. You would know, for instance, of anyone who had a grudge against her, or anyone who had a motive for desiring her dead.
I have no idea, Mr. Poirot. I assure you. You see, Lynette was brought up in England. I know very little of her surroundings or the kind of company she kept.
And yet there was someone on board who was interested in removing Mrs. Doyle. She had a narrow escape, you remember, at Abu Simbel, when the boulder crashed down. You must have seen it.
I didn't exactly witness it. I was inside the temple at the time. I heard about it afterwards, of course. But don't you think it could have been an accident?
One thought so at the time. Now one wonders.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Mr. Doyle happened to mention someone being on board who bore a grudge against Mrs. Doyle, or possibly against her family. Now, you were an intimate friend of her father's. Can you remember any business dealings of his that might have resulted in ruin for someone?
Well, nothing particular springs to mind. I'm not denying that Mellowish made enemies, of course, but I can't remember anyone seriously threatening him.
In short, Mr. Pennington, you cannot help us.
So it seems. I deplore my inadequacy, gentlemen.
We too are sorry, Mr. Pennington. We had the little hopes, you understand?
As Doyle's laid up, I expect you'd like me to attend to things. What exactly are the arrangements, Colonel?
We shall be setting off from here in a few minutes for a non-stop run to Shellal, arriving there tomorrow morning.
And the body?
That will be removed to one of the cold storage chambers.
Thank you, Colonel. Sorry I couldn't be of more help, gentlemen.
Mr. Pennington was not at all comfortable.
And he was sufficiently disturbed to tell a very stupid lie. I know very well that he was not inside the temple at Abu Simbel when that boulder fell.
As you say, a very stupid lie.
But for the moment, we handle him with the gloves of kid. Is it not so?
We're on our way. I think perhaps the time has come to look into the little matter of Mrs. Doyle's missing pearls.
You have a plan?
Yes. It will be lunchtime in half an hour. I propose to make an announcement to all the passengers, stating that the pearls have been stolen, and that I must request everyone to stay in the dining saloon while a search is conducted.
It is well imagined. By giving no warning beforehand, there will be no chance of the thief throwing the pearls overboard in a panic.
That was the idea.
Half an hour. That gives me time for another little talk with Mademoiselle Otterbourne. I think I now know what it was she threw into the Nile.
I thought I'd answered all your questions, Monsieur Poirot. What is it now?
You are accustomed to carrying your own burdens, mademoiselle. But after a time, the strain becomes too great.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Let us call the spade and say it in one short sentence. Your mother drinks.
But, monsieur...
No, there's no need for you to say anything, mademoiselle. I happened to come across your mother in a state of unmistakable intoxication.
Oh, my God.
You were coping with it as well as you could, but your mother had the cunning of a secret drinker and had got hold of a considerable supply of spirits. Perhaps it was only yesterday that you discovered where she had hidden it. And so, as soon as your mother was soundly asleep, you took the cache of bottles and threw it into the Nile. I am right, am I not?
Yes, you're quite right. It isn't really her fault. No one buys her books anymore. People are tired of all that cheap sex stuff. It hurt her dreadfully, and then she began to drink. When I found out, I did my best to get her to stop. It was awful, and then she began to dislike me for it. She's turned against me. I think she hates me sometimes.
Ah, pauvre petite.
Don't be sorry for me. It's a relief to talk about it. Are you going to have to tell everyone?
No, it is not necessary. But there is something I wish to know. Miss Van Schuller says that she saw you. Did you see her?
No, I didn't. I just looked along the deck and out over the river.
And did you see anyone when you looked along the deck?
No, I saw no one.
What you don't seem to realise, Mother, is that everyone on this damn boat is under suspicion. You and I, as well as the rest of them.
Oh, technically, I suppose we are,
You may well sit there, exuding virtue and rectitude, but a lot of unpleasant policemen at Shellal aren't just going to take you at your face value.
By that time, the truth may be known, Tim.
Why should it be?
Monsieur Poirot may find out.
Oh, that old mantebank, he won't find out anything. He's all talk and moustaches.
Oh, forgive me, Madame Alarton. I am a little late. I have been much occupied.
Is Mr. Doyle badly hurt?
Oh, yes. It is a fairly serious injury. That is why we are returning immediately to Shellal, so that the wound can be properly treated.
What a shame. Only yesterday he looked such a happy boy with everything in the world he wanted, and now... I do hope he's not going to be too angry with that poor girl.
With Mademoiselle Jacqueline, au contraire, he was full of anxiety on her behalf.
I suppose he feels that he's got nothing to fear from her anymore. When she was following them about all over the place, she made him look a bit of a fool. Now it's she who's made a fool of herself, and so...
He can be generously forgiving. What children men are.
Mr. Alarton, there was something I've been meaning to ask you. Madame Doyle's cousin, Joanna Southwood, did she resemble Madame Doyle?
No, you've got it a bit wrong, Monsieur Poirot. Joanna's our cousin and Lynette's friend.
Oh, pardon, I was confused. Yes. I wonder if all young ladies with valuable jewels are as careless as Madame Doyle was.
I don't see what that's got to do with it.
Is it true, then? Her pearls were stolen.
Who told you so, madame?
Well, Ferguson said so.
Ah, remember. Yes, it is quite true.
Oh, well, I suppose that what with the pearls and the murder, this will mean a lot of unpleasantness for all of us. Well, Tim says so.
Oh, you have previous experience, perhaps? You have been in a house where there was a robbery?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yes, you have, darling. You were at the Port Arlington's when that awful woman's diamonds were stolen.
You always get things hopelessly wrong, Mother. Oh. I was there when it was discovered that the diamonds she was wearing round her fat neck were really only paste. The actual substitution must have been carried out months earlier. A lot of people said she'd done it herself.
Well, Joanna said so, I expect.
Joanna wasn't even there. You're always down on her.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? I'm sorry to have to inform you that a valuable pearl necklace belonging to the late Mrs. Doyle has been stolen. Oh. Since the theft may have taken place at the time of the murder, it's obviously a matter of considerable importance. I've decided to instigate a search of all the cabins on the boat. I would be greatly obliged if you would all remain here in the dining saloon until the search has been completed. After that, if you all agree, as I'm sure you will, everyone on the boat will be subject to a... how shall I put this? a personal search.
Yes, thank
you for your cooperation.
Well, Colonel, that has fairly put the cat among the pigeons.
It certainly looks like it. Shall we begin?
No. Let us wait a little minute longer. I wish to know if anyone has been sufficiently alarmed as to want to have a private word.
Quite a good idea.
Excuse me, Colonel, but there's a lady who says she wants to speak to you without delay. She says it's most urgent.
And which of the ladies is it?
It's Miss Bowers.
Miss Bowers?
The hospital nurse. The one who looks after Miss Van Schuler. She's in the little smoking room.
I'm sorry, Colonel Race, but under the circumstances, I thought I should speak to you at once. And to hand over these.
But this is most extraordinary. Will you kindly explain?
It wasn't an easy decision to take. The family would naturally be averse to any kind of scandal. But if in the course of your search you were to come across them, then...
You mean to say that it was you who took these pearls from Mrs. Doyle's cabin?
Oh, no, Colonel, not me. It was Miss Van Schuler.
Good Lord!
She can't help it, you see. But she does take things, especially jewelry. That's the real reason I travel with her. It's not her health at all. It's this little idiosyncrasy. I keep on the alert, and fortunately up till now there's never been any trouble. And she always hides the things in the same place, rolled up in a pair of stockings. So that makes it very simple.
And that is where you found these?
This morning.
And have you ever challenged Miss Van Schuler about these thefts?
She denies it. Says some wicked person must have put it there. She never admits taking anything. She says she just went out to look at the moon or something like that.
And does Miss Robson know about this, idiosyncrasy?
No, she doesn't.
We have to thank you, Mademoiselle, for coming down so promptly.
It won't get into the newspapers, will it?
Oh, no. We shall do our best to help you.
Tell me, does Miss Van Schuler suffer at all from deafness?
As a matter of fact, she does. Not so that you'd realize when you were speaking to her, but quite often she doesn't notice when you come into a room, things like that.
Thank you, Mademoiselle Bowers.
Perhaps we've got enough to go back to the dining saloon now and wait with the others.
Of course, Colonel.
Extraordinary. Quite extraordinary.
I do not think that Miss Van Schuler heard anyone moving about in Lynette Doyle's cabin. I think she was peering round her door, preparing to slip along and steal the pearls.
But if she took them at 1:10, Mrs. Doyle was probably already dead.
I doubt very much whether Miss Van Schuler would have noticed. She would have thought she was sleeping soundly, taken the pearls, and crept away as quietly as possible.
And being deaf, she wouldn't have heard the shot beforehand. I begin to understand now why no one heard it. The cabin on the forward side of Mrs. Doyle was unoccupied since her husband had been taken to Dr. Besner's cabin. And the cabin aft was Miss Van Schuler's, who was deaf. The cabin on the other side of the boat
was occupied by Mr. Pennington. Curious how we always seem to come back to him.
Yes. Well, we'd better get on with our search of the boat. I don't imagine Miss Bowers is going to tell about the pearls, so they'll give us a convenient excuse.
The pearls. And here is another little mystery. I am no expert, but I would say that these pearls are only a clever imitation.
I'll have to take your word for it. They look all right to me.
They are a good imitation, yes.
Perhaps Lynette Doyle had an imitation set made to bring out to Egypt for safety. Some women do.
Well, anything is possible. But I must point out to you one thing. To make a perfect copy of the pearls, including the clasp, good enough to deceive Madame Doyle, could not have been done in a hurry. Whoever copied these pearls must have had a good opportunity of studying the original.
Well, there's no point in worrying about it now. We'll start our search on the lower deck, Mr. Ricchetti's cabin.
The Tel al-Amarna tablets, ancient records of Egypt.
A letter from an archaeological expert in Egypt, and one from his sister in Rome.
And a bottle of highly scented hair lotion.
Nothing. Let's try Ferguson.
Erich I by Samuel Butler. Pepys's diary.
No letters, no personal papers.
Now, what is most curious is that all his outer clothing is shabby and well-worn, whereas his underclothes are of very fine quality.
Very odd. That odd young man altogether.
Hmm. Yeah. And a very interesting signet ring.
We're wasting our time here. The French maid, Louise Bourget, is next.
I can't find Miss Bourget anywhere, sir. She's not with the other passengers. I can't think where she's got to. Her cabin's empty.
Well, we don't want her to come barging in. Let's go up to the promenade deck and see what we can find out about the mysterious Mr. Fanthorpe.
Everything in meticulous order. Nothing out of place.
Nothing that could give us the least clue as to who he is or what he's up to.
I suspect that he is very careful, our Mr. Fanthorpe, to destroy any correspondence. Let us see if Mr. Allerton's cabin is any more revealing.
The fellow must be an Anglo-Catholic. Rosary, a crucifix.
A half-completed manuscript with which he's evidently having a little difficulty, a few letters, and a tube of secretine.
No pearls, at any rate. Let's try his mother's cabin.
What a charming smell of lavender. Everything so neat, so clean.
But nothing of the least interest. What about Mr. Paddington? He's bound to have something to hide.
So, it seems there are still some people who travel with revolvers.
Very heavy. Very old-fashioned. Yes. Not at all the kind of job used to kill Lynette Doyle.
And as for all these documents, on the face of it, there is nothing that is particularly compromising.
So, where now? Why don't we make a search of Lynette Doyle's cabin? If there's anything to be found there, you'll find it, I'm sure of that.
2 little bottles of Nalex. 1 Nalex Rose, which is empty apart from a little red fluid at the bottom, and 1 Nalex Cardinal, which is full.
We don't seem to be getting anywhere at all.
Ah, no, my friend. Our little search has at least helped us to comprehend the psychology of the passengers.
Time's getting on. Why don't I check the other cabins while you have a chat with Simon Doyle? He might be able to tell us a little more about the pearls.
The pearls were insured against every possible risk. That may have made Lynette a little careless. Well, she wore them everywhere. As a matter of fact, she was wearing them last night. She was passing them through her hands and talking about them. She'd have known if they were fakes, surely.
Perhaps, but they would have been a very good imitation. Tell me, was Madame Doyle unusually generous with her things? Did she ever lend them to a friend, for instance?
It's difficult for me to say. I hadn't known Lynette for very long. She might very well have done.
Sorry to interrupt you, Poirot, but the people who've been searching the passengers have come to make a report. The stewardess has some information which she thinks might interest us.
It was Miss Otterbourne, sir. There was a little pistol in her handbag.
What kind?
It was a very small one with a pearl handle.
Does every gal on this blasted boat carry a pearl-handled pistol?
What was Miss Otterbourne's reaction when you found it?
I don't think she noticed it, sir. I had my back to her while I was going through her handbag.
Well, still, she must have known you'd come across it. Tell me, is there any sign of Mrs. Doyle's maid, Louise Bourget?
We've looked all over the boat, sir. We can't find her anywhere.
When was she last seen?
About half an hour before the bell went for lunch, sir.
Well, she must be somewhere on board. Let's take a look in her cabin, Poirot. May tell us something.
For a lady's maid, she was exceedingly untidy. Clothes hanging out of her suitcase, makeup all over the dressing table.
The shoes all along the side of the bed left all anyhow. Good Lord!
What is it?
Oh, no wonder they couldn't find her. She's here, under the bed. Give me a hand, will you? Stabbed to the heart. Death pretty well instantaneous, I should imagine. Doesn't look very pretty, does she?
No, she does not. She's got something in her right hand. There. You see what it is?
Money.
The corner of a 1,000-franc note.
Blackmail!
Oh, we have been idiots. What was it that she said? What could I have seen or heard? I was on the deck below. Naturally, if I had been unable to sleep and I had mounted the stairs, then perhaps I might have seen the murderer enter or leave Madame's cabin. Of course, that is exactly what did happen. She did see someone, but instead of telling us, she chose to try her hand at blackmail. And this is the result. Oh, I should have known. What a fool I have been.
Has something happened, Monsieur Poirot?
Yes, Mademoiselle Rosalie, something has happened. Madame Doyle's maid has been killed.
Killed?
Yes, that is what I said. You see, Mademoiselle Bourget saw something she was not intended to see. She saw someone enter and leave Lynette Doyle's cabin on the night of the murder.
And did she say what it was she saw?
I am afraid not.
Why are you looking at me like that? What is it?
Why do you not tell me the truth, Mademoiselle?
I don't know what you mean. I've told you everything.
No, that is not so. You did not tell me that you carry in your handbag a small caliber pistol with a pearl handle, and you did not tell me all that you saw last night.
You're talking nonsense. I have no pistol. Look for yourself.
No, it is not there.
You see, you're not always right, Monsieur Poirot. And you're wrong about last night as well.
No, I do not think so. I want you to tell me the truth.
What is the truth? You seem to know more about it than I do.
You want me to tell you what it was you saw? I think that when you came round the stern of the boat to throw the bottles into the Nile, you stopped because you saw a man come out of the cabin halfway down the deck. Lynette Doyle's cabin. Am I right, mademoiselle? Perhaps you think it wise not to speak. Perhaps you are afraid that if you do, you too will be killed.
I saw no one, Monsieur Poirot. I saw no one. No one at all.
Poirot, I want to talk to you. I've got an idea.
What is it, Colonel?
It's about that telegram you said the net Doyle opened in error. Nothing in it, perhaps, but one can't leave any avenue unexplored. I mean, damn it all, man. Two murders and we're still in the dark.
No, not in the dark. In the light.
What? You have an idea?
I see now that we must start again from the beginning. My first conception was entirely wrong.
I haven't the foggiest idea what you're getting at, Poirot. But if we have to go back to the beginning, let's go and talk to Doyle about that telegram.
Yes, I remember. It was at Wadi Haifa. We'd just come back from the Second Cataract. Well, Lynette thought she saw a telegram for her sticking up on the board. Well, she'd forgotten that she wasn't called Ridgway anymore, and Riquetti and Ridgway do look rather alike when written in atrocious handwriting.
And do you know what was in that telegram?
Lynette read part of it aloud. It said...
Mr. Doyle! Oh, excellent. Colonel Rayson, Monsieur Poirot, with you.
What is it, Mrs. Ottable?
Mr. Doyle, I know who killed your wife. It may appear impossible, but it is the truth. You agree that whoever killed Louise Bourget also killed your wife?
Yes, of course, that stands to reason.
I know who killed Louise Bourget, and therefore I know who killed Lynette Doyle.
You mean you have a theory as to who killed Louise Bourget?
No, I have exact knowledge. I saw the person with my own eyes.
Then if you know who killed Louise Bourget, for God's sake, tell us!
It was when I went down to lunch. We were halfway to the saloon when I remembered I had left something, and I told Rosalie to go on without me. I had an arrangement with one of the personnel of the ship. He was to get something I needed. I was to meet him on the stern of the deck below this.
Oh, for God's sake, get a move on.
Yes, come to the point, Mrs. Ottleborn.
As I reached there, a cabin door opened and Louise looked out. But when she saw it was me, she looked disappointed and closed it again. I got the stuff from the man and I started back. And just as I came round the corner, I saw someone knock on the door of her cabin and go in.
And who was this person, madame?
Oh, mon Dieu. Is she dead?
Yes, Mr. Doyle. She's dead.
What the devil was that?
Did you encounter anyone on your way here?
No one. What's happened?
Madame Otterborn has been shot. And I fancy with this revolver.
I rather think we've seen it somewhere before.
Yes, it is the revolver of Monsieur Pennington.
We'd better have a word with him.
I noticed him a little while ago. He is in the small drawing room.
Why, gentlemen, this is a very serious matter.
Very serious for you, Mr. Pennington.
For me, but my dear sirs, I was sitting quietly writing letters in here when that shot was fired.
But why should your revolver be used?
Well, I'm afraid I may be to blame there. We had a conversation in the saloon one evening about firearms, and I mentioned that I always carry a revolver with me when I travel.
Who was there?
I can't remember exactly. Most people, I think...
Monsieur Pennington, I would like to discuss certain details of the case with you. Will you come to my cabin in half an hour's time?
Why, yes, I should be delighted.
I'll never forget this trip as long as I live, Monsieur Perrault.
Ah, yes.
It's like being in a nightmare.
Well, what of it? They're no great loss.
Oh, you're wrong, Mr. Ferguson. It makes me sick to hear you talk as though nothing mattered in the world but you. Lynette Doyle was so beautiful when she came into a room that it made a lump come into your throat.
You're unbelievable. You haven't got a bit of natural spite in you anywhere. Do you know, Monsieur Poirot, that Cornelia's father was practically ruined by Lynette Ridgway's old man?
But that was all in the past. It's the future that matters.
Cornelia Robson, you're the only truly nice woman I've ever come across. Will you marry me?
Oh, don't be absurd.
It's a genuine proposal. You're my witness, Monsieur Poirot.
I think you're utterly ridiculous.
Why won't you marry me?
Because you laugh at all the things I love. All the really serious things. You wouldn't be reliable.
Damn the girl. I believe she means it. She wants a man to be reliable. Reliable. What do you think of her?
I think that she has a great deal of character.
You're right. She's got spirit. She's got guts. Damn it, I want that girl. It mightn't be a bad move if I tackled Miss Van Schuyler. If I could get her thoroughly against me, it might cut some ice with Cornelia.
It's preposterous. You marry Cornelia, it's utterly out of the question.
You mean I'm not good enough for her?
There is such a thing as social position, Mr. Ferguson.
Social position is bunk, but I don't imagine I can convince you of that. Anyway, don't be too sure, Miss Van Schuyler. I'll be calling you cousin yet.
What an uncouth, insolent young man.
Rather eccentric, I'm afraid. Most of that family are always inclined to tilt at windmills. You recognized him, I suppose.
Recognized him?
Yes, that's young Lord Dawlish. Rolling in money, of course. But he became a communist when he was at Oxford.
How long have you known this, Monsieur Poirot?
Ever since I found a signet ring with his family coat of arms on it. And now, if you will excuse me, I have more urgent matters to attend to.
So, what can I do for you, gentlemen?
I perceive, Mr. Fanthorpe, that you wear the same tie that my old friend Hastings wears.
It's an O.E. tie.
Exactement. You must understand that although I am a foreigner, I know something of the English point of view, and there are certain things that the old school tie does not do. One of those things is to butt into a private conversation when one does not know the people who are conducting it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do, Mr. Fanthorpe.
The other day you strolled over to Madame Doyle when she was in conversation with Mr. Pennington, and you tried to eavesdrop. And then you congratulated her on the soundness of her business methods. What was your object in that?
I had no object, I assure you, Monsieur Poirot.
I rather think you were trying to prevent Madame Doyle from signing any document... unread.
If we tell you that the weapon which killed Mrs. Otterborn was a revolver owned by Mr. Pennington, what? You will realize that it is your duty to tell us all you can.
Why did you come on this trip, Monsieur Fanthorpe?
Very well. My uncle, Mr. Carmichael, Lynette Doyle's English solicitor, sent me. He was often in correspondence with Mr. Pennington, who was Mrs. Doyle's American trustee. Several small incidents made my uncle suspicious that all was... not as it should be.
In plain language, your uncle suspected that Pennington was a crook.
You put it rather more bluntly than I would, Colonel, but that was the general idea.
And there is your motive.
And it's time for our meeting with Pennington.
Thank you for your assistance, Monsieur Fanthorpe.
Well, gentlemen, what can I do for you?
Tell me, Mr. Pennington, Are Lynette Doyle's affairs in the proper order they should be?
They're in perfect order.
You were not then so alarmed when the news of Lynette Ridgway's marriage reached you that you rushed over on the first boat and staged an apparently fortuitous meeting in Egypt?
That's utter rubbish. I didn't even know Lynette was married until I met her in Cairo.
You came over on the Carmenach, I think you said.
That's right.
It is strange. All the labels on your luggage are from the Normandy, which sailed 2 days later.
Come on, Mr. Pennington. It's no good denying it. It's the easiest thing in the world to check with the steamship companies.
So what does it matter?
We believe that you came to Egypt post-haste to try and find some way out of the mess you are in. You endeavoured to obtain Madame Doyle's signature on certain documents, which you failed to do. And then, when walking along the clifftop at Abu Simbel, you dislodged a boulder which fell and narrowly missed Madame Doyle.
You're crazy!
Time will show.
What do you mean?
This is a matter of 3 deaths, 3 murders. The law will demand the most searching investigation into the condition of Madame Doyle's estate.
You've played and lost, Mr. Pennington.
You don't understand. Wall Street has been crazy. I mean, with luck, everything will be okay by June.
I suppose that the boulder was a sudden temptation. You thought nobody saw you.
That was an accident. I stumbled and fell upon it. It was an accident. And it wasn't me who shot her. You can't pin that one on me.
Well, we got more than I thought we should. Admission of fraud, admission of attempted murder. Further than that, it's impossible to go. You won't get him to confess to the real thing.
Pennington did not do it.
What?
He did not do it. He had the motive, yes. He even got so far as attempting it. But this crime needed something he did not have. It needed audacity.
Have you got it all worked out?
Yes. Let us send for Tim Allerton.
So, what can I do for you, Monsieur Poirot?
I wish to speak of your cousin Joanna Southwood.
What about her?
I have been hearing quite a lot of that name recently from Inspector Japp at New Scotland Yard.
Really?
Yes. For some time now, he has been concerned about certain jewel robberies. They are what might be described as society robberies. The method is usually the same. The substitution of an imitation piece of jewellery. Inspector Japp came to the conclusion that the robberies were the work of 2 people. Probably of good social position. And his attention became centred on Joanna Southwood. Every one of the victims had been a friend or an acquaintance of hers, and in each case she had either handled or been lent the piece of jewellery in question.
I see. Go on.
On the other hand, it was quite clear that the actual robbery, that is to say the actual substitution, was not her work. It was carried out by someone who could have been proved never to have handled the jewels or to have been involved in the copying of them. Of the identity of this person, Japp was ignorant.
What exactly are you driving at, Poirot?
No, patience, my friend. Certain things which you said, Mr. Allerton, interested me. You mentioned that a fake substitution had occurred at a house party where you had been a guest. And when Madame Doyle's pearls were stolen, my suspicions were aroused. And when the pearls were returned and transpired to be imitation, I was certain that you were involved.
And what am I supposed to have done with the pearls?
They are concealed in the beads of a rosary that hangs in your cabin.
Well, it's been a good game, Monsieur Poirot. There's nothing for it now, I suppose, but to take my medicine.
Do you realize that you were seen that night?
Seen?
Someone saw you coming out of Lynette Doyle's cabin just after 1 in the morning, the night she was murdered.
Look, you can't be thinking. I didn't kill her. I've been in the most awful stew. To have picked that night of all nights. Who was it saw me?
Rosalie Otterbourne.
So it was she who told you?
Certainly not. I am Hercule Poirot, and I do not need to be told. When I taxed her with it, she told me that she saw nobody. And she lied.
She's an extraordinary sort of a girl. She must have had a pretty rough time with that mother of hers.
Yes, life has not been easy for her.
So, Poirot, where do we go from here?
Look, I admit taking the pearls from Lynette's cabin. You'll find they're just where you say they are. I'm guilty, all right. But as far as Miss Southwood's concerned, I'm admitting nothing. How I got hold of the fake necklace is my own business.
A very correct attitude.
Always the gentleman.
And now I am going to ask Miss Ossipon if she will join us.
So it was you who took the pearls, but you didn't...
No, I didn't kill Lynette. I'm a thief, not a murderer.
Of course, we only have your word for that.
You may have stolen the pearls before last night. Suppose she had found out and threatened to expose the whole business, and that you took advantage of the confusion after Jacqueline de Belfort shot Simon Doyle to steal the pistol and make certain that Lynette Doyle would keep silent forever.
I swear it isn't true.
Of course it isn't true, and Monsieur Poirot knows it isn't true.
Mademoiselle is too clever. But there could be a clear case against you, Monsieur Allerton. I just wanted you to realize that. Now, I will tell you something a little more pleasant. If Mademoiselle Otterborn sticks to her story that she saw no one on the deck last night, there is no case against you. The pearls were taken by a kleptomaniac who has since returned them. They are in a little box on the table by the door. Perhaps you would care to take them away and examine them with Mademoiselle?
Give them to me. There. They've gone. And when I return the box to Monsieur Poirot, the real pearls will be in it. What a damned fool I've been.
Why did you do it in the first place?
Boredom. Laziness. The fun of the thing. I suppose it was mainly the risk.
I think I understand.
And without the money, I wouldn't be here. And I wouldn't have met you. Why didn't you say that you saw me last night?
I thought they might suspect you.
Did you suspect me?
No. I couldn't believe that you'd kill anyone.
Rosalie, do you think you could... I mean, would you... Or will you always throw this back in my face?
There are things that you could throw in my face, too.
Rosalie.
This Joanna Southwood.
Oh, you're as bad as my mother. I don't care about Joanna. She's got a predatory eye and a face like a horse.
Now, look here, I'm a patient man, Poirot, but there are limits to my patience. Do you know who committed these three murders on this boat, or don't you?
I do.
Then let's have no more beating about the bush. It wasn't Allerton, it wasn't Pennington. Who was it, then?
My friend, I am about to tell you.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Monsieur Poirot, but Miss Robson wishes to speak to you.
Miss Barris has just told me about Cousin Marie and the pearls. I couldn't believe it at first, but... Dr. Bessner has been simply wonderful.
I simply explained that kleptomania is a medical condition like any other.
But I'm terribly worried in case it all gets out.
I have no fear, Miss Robson. Monsieur Poirot and I are getting accustomed to overlooking these little peccadilloes.
I beg your pardon, Colonel Race.
Well, I mean that anything short of murder is being hushed up.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
And have you heard any more from Mr. Ferguson?
No, but Cousin Marie told me he's got a title of some sort. As far as I'm concerned, he's even more out of the question now. And besides, Dr. Bessner...
I understand. Now, tell me, Doctor, how is Mr. Doyle?
Oh, he's going on splendidly.
Oh, then since he's all right, there's no reason why we shouldn't ask him about that telegram.
Ah, that was very funny. He told me all about it. The telegram was just a list of vegetables, potatoes, artichokes...
My... God! So it was him, Ricchetti.
I'm sorry?
It's a new code. We first encountered it on the uprising 6 months ago. Potatoes means machine guns. Artichokes are high explosives. And so on. Ricchetti is no more an archaeologist than I am. He's a dangerous agitator who's killed more than once in the past and has probably done so again. He is our man, Poirot.
He is your man, Colonel. But it was not Ricchetti who killed Lynette Doyle. I know who the murderer is. But although I know what happened, I have no proof.
But who is it? Aren't you going to tell us?
I think the time has come, Poirot.
Very well, then. You and I, Colonel, started our investigation with a preconceived idea. That idea was that the crime was committed on the spur of the moment without any previous planning. But now I know that this was no spontaneous crime.
But what gave you the first hint that the crime was not spontaneous?
It was when the pistol was retrieved from the Nile. Huh? The weapon was wrapped in a velvet stole with a handkerchief showing a faint pink stain. When you examined Lynette Doyle's body, Doctor, what was it that you observed about the wound?
There were signs of scorching. The pistol had obviously been placed close against the head before being fired.
But the stole, you see, showed definite signs that the pistol had been fired through it. Therefore, that could not have been the shot which killed Lynette Doyle. For then, there would have been no scorch marks on the wound.
And then it must have been the shot fired by Jacqueline de Belfort.
Yeah, but I was there, and the pistol certainly wasn't wrapped in any stole.
Exactly. So, a third shot must have been fired.
But how? When?
The next interesting point was the fact that in Lynette Doyle's cabin I found two bottles of coloured nail varnish. One contained only a few drops of a bright red liquid, which was, in fact, red ink.
So that was what had stained the handkerchief. Red ink washes out but always leaves a pink stain.
The next clue was something I realized far too late. When I was questioning Louise Bourget in Simon Doyle's cabin, she was very careful to suggest that if she had mounted the stairs from her cabin that night, she would have seen the murderer. Now, why do that? Because she was letting the murderer know that she had witnessed the crime. But apart from Colonel Race and myself, the only people present were Simon Doyle and Dr. Bessner.
Now, look here, you are surely not suggesting
no,
that
no, no, I am only letting you follow the workings of my mind, Doctor. The reaction of the little grey cells. It was obvious that Louise Bourget's words could only have been intended for Simon Doyle.
But how could a man with a fractured bone and a splint on his leg go about the boat murdering people? It does not make sense.
Exactly, Doctor, it did not make sense. So I had to go back to the beginning. Was it possible for Simon Doyle to have murdered his wife? Had he left the saloon at any point before his quarrel with Jacqueline de Belfort?
No, he was there all the time. I would have noticed.
And then I realized that there was a time when he had been left alone for at least 5 minutes after the shot had been fired and before Dr. Bessner arrived to give his expert testimony about the wound. When Jacqueline de Belfort had shot Mr. Doyle, Miss Robson, what did you see?
He collapsed on a chair with the handkerchief to his leg. You could see the blood soaking through. You mean it wasn't blood?
Precisely, mademoiselle. It was red ink.
And Mr. Doyle was most insistent that I should get Mr. Belfort away and not leave her alone. And he sent Mr. Fanthorpe to find Miss Bowers.
For the next 5 minutes, everyone is occupied on the port side. Simon Doyle picks up the pistol from under the sofa where Jacqueline de Belfort had kicked it, runs silently to the starboard deck, enters his wife's cabin, and shoots her through the head, puts the bottle, which had contained the red ink, on the dressing table, runs back, gets hold of Miss Van Schuler's stole, which he had stuffed down the side of his chair, wraps it around the pistol, and shoots himself in the leg. His chair is by the window. He has just enough strength to leave the window and to throw the pistol, and with it the stole and the handkerchief, into the Nile.
Ah, no, no, it's just not possible, Poirot. Nobody could think all that up by himself on the spur of the moment.
But as I have told you, it was not on the spur of the moment, nor did he think it up by himself. Everything depended on Jacqueline de Belfort kicking the pistol under the settee.
Jacqueline?
Certainly. The two halves of the murder. What gave Doyle his alibi? The shot fired by Jacqueline. What gave Jacqueline her alibi? The insistence of Simon Doyle that she should have a hospital nurse staying with her all night. There, between the two of them, you get all the qualities you require. The cool, resourceful, planning brain, Jacqueline de Belfort, and the man of action to carry it out. It answers every question. Simon Doyle and Jacqueline had been lovers. Realize that they are still lovers, and everything is clear. Simon Doyle does away with his rich wife, inherits her money, and in due course will return to his former love.
So it was Jacqueline de Belfort who killed Louise Bourget?
Yes.
And Mrs. Otterbourne?
Do you remember how Simon shouted at the poor woman? The door was open, and he was trying to warn Jacqueline. She heard, and she acted like lightning. She remembered Pennington had talked about having a revolver. She got hold of it, and at the critical moment, fired.
And what happened to the first bullet fired at Doyle by the girl?
I think it went into the table.
It seems they had thought of everything.
No. You are wrong. They did not think of Hercule Poirot.
You were too clever for us. I'd have bluffed you out, but you sprang it on Simon and he went down like a ninepin, lost his head and admitted everything. He's a bad loser.
But you, Mademoiselle, are a good loser.
Oh, yes. But I'm not a safe person any longer. It all seemed so simple to begin with. Simon and I really did love one another.
And for you, love would have been everything. But not for him.
He's always wanted money, so dreadfully. He's awfully simple. He wants things just as a child wants them.
And the job of land agent which you had persuaded your old friend Lynette Doyle to offer him was not enough to satisfy his greed?
You know, Lynette went all out to get Simon away from me. I was her friend, but she didn't care.
And what was his reaction?
He didn't give a damn about her. The whole thing embarrassed him dreadfully. But he did like the thought of her money.
And then?
And then one day he said, if I'd any luck, I'd marry her and she'd die in about a year and leave me the lot. And then a queer look came into his eyes. But I realized that he'd never pull it off by himself. So I had to come into it. To look after him. At a Swan, you warned me about opening my heart to evil.
Mm-hmm.
I could have pulled back then, but I didn't. And after that, it all became so horribly, frighteningly easy. I suppose when we get to Shillal, you're going to hand us over to the police?
I have no alternative, mademoiselle.
Don't mind too much for me, Monsieur Poirot.
They're bringing Doyle off on a stretcher. Remarkable how he just went to pieces. I'm sorry for the girl, but there's nothing to be done about it.
People say love justifies everything, but that is not true. Women who care for men as much as Jacqueline does for Simon are very dangerous.
We've got Mr. Doyle here, Colonel. Shall we take him ashore?
Yes, let's not waste any more time. The passengers will want to get off.
Hello, Simon.
Jackie, I messed it up. Lost my head and admitted everything. Sorry, I've let you down.
Shh, don't give it a thought. A fool's game, and we lost. That's all. Goodbye, Monsieur Poirot!
Where the devil did she get that pistol?
Did you know she had the pistol, Monsieur Poirot?
She had a pair of pistols. I realized that when I heard that one had been found in Rosalie Otterborn's handbag. Jacqueline must have slipped it in there when she knew there was going to be a search of the passengers, and retreated later.
Did you want her to take that way out?
I did, Mrs. Allerton. But I knew she would not take it alone. That is why Simon Doyle has died an easier death than he deserved.
Love can be a very frightening thing.
That is why all love stories end in tragedy, madame.
A very messy business, but I think I've got everything sorted out with the local police. I suppose you'll be off back home now, Poirot.
Ah, yes, but I shall make a very leisurely return. I plan to visit Jerusalem, and perhaps a little excursion to Petra.
I'm glad to see you haven't lost your appetite for sightseeing, Monsieur Poirot.
There is one thing in Hercule Poirot that nothing can extinguish.
What is that, my friend?
My curiosity.
In Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Colonel Race by Donald Sinden. Jacqueline de Belfort, Amanda Barton Chapel, Simon Doyle, Robert Dawes, Lynette Ridgway, Elaine Pike, Mrs. Allerton, Rosemary Leach, Tim Allerton, Nicholas Bolton, Mrs. Otterborn, Shirley Dixon, Rosalie Otterborn, Emma Woodvine, Miss Van Schuler, Irene Sutcliffe, Cornelia Teresa Gallagher, Pennington Stratford Johns. With Timothy Bateson, Joanna Munro, Sean Baker, Ed Bishop, Chris Pavlow, Christopher Scott, Robert Portal, Roger May, Ben Thomas, Johan Meredith, Keith Drinkle, and Janet Moore. Death on the Nile was dramatized by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams. Present Agatha Christie's The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, with John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and John Woodvine as Dr. Shepherd, the storyteller.
Mrs. Ferrers died on the night of the 16th to the 17th of September, a Thursday. I was sent for at 8 o'clock on the morning of Friday the 17th. There was nothing I could do. She had been dead some hours. It was just a few minutes after 9 when I reached home once more.
Is that you, James? What are you doing out there?
Just hanging up my overcoat.
Why don't you come and get your breakfast?
Just coming.
You've had an early call?
Yes. King's Paddock. Mrs. Ferrers.
I know.
How did you know?
The milkman told me. Well?
Bad business. Nothing to be done.
What did she die of? Heart failure?
She died of an overdose of Veronal. She's been taking it lately for sleeplessness. Must have taken too much.
Nonsense. She took it on purpose.
Now, why on earth should Mrs. Ferrers wish to commit suicide? A widow, still fairly young, very well off, and nothing to do but enjoy life. Now, what possible reason could
remorse.
She have?
Remorse.
Remorse?
Yes. You're always so preoccupied, tinkering about your electric gadgets. You don't notice what's going on under your nose. You never would believe me when I told you she poisoned her husband. I'm more than ever convinced of it now. She's been haunted by what she did. 10 to 1, she's left a letter confessing everything.
She didn't leave a letter of any kind.
You'd thought she'd have left something for Roger Ackroyd. After all, they were practically man and wife.
Caroline.
And who could blame them? I mean, after all, Mrs. Ackroyd died of drink, and Mrs. Ferrers, his husband, was an alcoholic. If his sister-in-law hadn't descended on him from Canada, they'd have been married by now. Now, where are you going?
I'm going down to the village, Caroline. I've got better things to do than sit around here listening to gossip.
Shepherd! Just the man I wanted to get hold of. This is a terrible business.
Now, you've heard them. I'm very sorry, Ackroyd.
It's worse than you know. Look here, I've got to talk to you. Can you come back with me now?
Well, hardly. I've got 3 patients to see, and I must be back by 12 to see to my surgery.
Then dine with me tonight. My sister-in-law will be there, and Flora. Oh, and Hector Blunt's coming along. But I'll think of some excuse to get away from them. I must talk to you.
I went home thoughtful, to find several patients waiting in the surgery. I had dismissed the last of them, as I thought, when I perceived one more patient, Ackroyd's housekeeper, Miss Russell.
Good morning, Doctor. I should be much obliged if you'd look at my knee.
I took a look, but I was very little wiser when I had done so. I prescribed some liniment. But she seemed inclined to linger.
Not that I believe that anything will do me much good. I don't believe in all these drugs. Drugs do a lot of harm. Look at the cocaine habit. Suppose you are a slave of the drug habit. Is there any cure?
I answered her as best I could.